Well, today is a big day for us. We are going to be talking about the next 10 years here at Real Life. And so if you are a guest with us today, maybe hadn't been here in a while, haven't been a part of the conversation of what's been going on, we've just recently finished up a 10-year vision plan. And so we've spent the last several months kind of dreaming out ahead and looking out ahead and seeing what's the next 10 years have for Real Life. Real Life Community as a church is about 16 years old now. So we're trying to think of in 10 years, when Real Life is 25 years old, what do we want to be able to look back and celebrate? What kind of a church do we want to be in those days? And so we've been talking a lot in leadership groups and church board, church staff about vision planning and what it looks like to kind of wrestle down a vision from God and kind of get an idea of what kind of vision God has for our community and our church. And so we've been working on that for the past several months. Today, we're going to begin rolling that out. Now, this is going to be a process that takes a little while. I'm going to tell you today about kind of some beyond the horizon line stuff, like 10 years. What's the big picture of what we want to see happen? And then the next several weeks, we're going to start piecing that out and really looking at addressing some particular parts of that vision plan. So, but we've been talking about vision for a while. I've been thinking about this for a while. And obviously, when you talk about vision and driving and directions and guidance and that kind of thing, I think about these pictures of roads that stretch out into the distance and have these wonderful, like picturesque kind of mountainsides and things that you look at if you peer off into the distance. And for me growing up, a picture of a road, really, they all looked exactly the same. They look like this, except they were all straight, right? I grew up in Indiana, and everything's laid out in central Indiana on a grid, and there's cornfields on the side of every one. And one of the things about all the roads that I grew up on, they were very narrow, and if you weren't careful to stay on that road and know where you were going and make sure you kept your eyes out in front of you, then there were these ditches on either side. And that's why one of the reasons I picked this picture is because you can see that kind of fall off of the road. And in our lives in general, I think that we tend to fall into a couple of different ditches when it comes to getting the places where we're going. And one ditch that we tend to fall into in life in general is the ditch of just drifting in life. Anybody ever been guilty of that? Just like you wake up one morning and you realize after a while of not thinking about it that, man, I've let these past couple of years, these past 5 years or my whole life up to this point, just kind of like I've drifted and I've ended up at a place that I didn't necessarily mean to be at. I just kind of showed up here on accident. And this is one of the ditches that we can fall into in our lives in general of not being intentional about where we're going. And so we just kind of, when you're drifting, you just kind of go with the flow of culture. So like whatever, you know, the news media is or the news cycle or my Facebook feed is telling me to think about and concentrate on, that's what I'm going to be working on and thinking about and concentrating on. And or whatever Hollywood is selling me at the moment or whatever Times Square is telling me is important for me. Those are the kinds of things that we tend to get caught up in. Maybe it's whatever your friend group is doing or family members. And when you're drifting, it's real easy to just kind of float along in life with whatever it is that's going on around you. And the trouble, again, is that a lot of times when we're drifting, one morning we wake up and we say, I don't like where I'm at. I don't like who I am. I don't like the kinds of journey that I've been on. And we start asking the question, how did we get here? How did I get here? And so that's one of the ditches that is real easy for us to land in, is just kind of drifting through life. Sometimes we try and course correct through to the other side, right? And we land in another ditch. And the other ditch, I think sometimes we can fall into, maybe you heard me talk about drifting and you're a planner and you're like, I would never drift. That's for ridiculousness. You know, I like to plan everything out, you know? And so you're not going to fall into that ditch. But another ditch that we can fall into is becoming the center of our own plan, to the point where I'm going to take the next 10 years and I'm going to plan it out just exactly like I want it, and I'm going to make it just for me, and my will is going to be accomplished in these next 10 years, here and here and here and here and here. And maybe we don't leave any margin for any other will to be represented in this plan other than what do I want to see happen in the next 10 years? Where do I want to be? What does my will look like? Anybody ever fallen in that kind of a ditch? It's a different kind of ditch, but we fall into either one of these on a regular basis. There's in the scriptures, we're right in the middle of the Bible. There is this wisdom literature that rises up. You find it in Job and Psalms and the Proverbs, and it's kind of this collection of all of the best wisdom of the people of God as they had been writing down and what the Spirit had been showing them over the course of their history and relationship with God. And right in the middle of the Bible, there's this book called Proverbs. And in the Proverbs, we learn a lot about what it means to live a wise life. And as a part of what it means to live a wise life is what it looks like to not fall in either one of these ditches of just drifting through life or making all of our own plans without regard for anything else other than what I feel like and what I want. And so when we read in the Proverbs, it talks a lot about what it looks like to be wise planners, in order that we might stay on that road to get to the destination that we want to get to. And one of the things, the starting place for the Proverbs wisdom on what it looks like to plan for life, or in our conversation today, for what it looks like to plan as a church, is that we have to recognize right off the bat that when we come to that blank sheet of paper and we try and lift up our head and dream out ahead, that we aren't starting from a blank piece of paper at all as the people of God. The reality is God already has plans and dreams for his people. God already has those dreams and plans. I don't know if you've thought about this before, but maybe you recognize in the scriptures that God is spoken of as a planner from time to time. Someone who does have plans and dreams for his people. There's that famous bumper sticker kind of verse, Jeremiah 29:11, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." And we hear that verse, and one of the things, so many things that it communicates to us about the character of God and how he works with his people. But one of the things that it reveals is that God's got some plans. God, when his people come to him, God has dreams and plans and ideas for those people, and they're good plans and they're future eternity kinds of plans. I don't kind of subscribe to the idea that God is a God who plans out and micromanages our daily life to the point where, like, if you wake up late and it's not out of God's plan, you know, you wake up at 6:01 and God planned for you to wake up at 6 o'clock, then you're in trouble for the rest of the day. Like, it's just shot. I don't think God micromanages us like that, but I do believe that God has a trajectory for our life. And God, for each one of us, has a goal and a dream about who you would become and what kind of person you would be in the belonging in the body of Christ and in the kingdom of God as his children. And God also, I believe, has plans for his local bodies, his local congregations, for the kind of churches that they would be in contribution to the big picture kingdom of God kind of work. And so when we talk about starting to make plans, we start from a place of recognizing that we believe that God already has some plans. And so our first step is seeking God and saying, God, what are those? What do you want for us? And this isn't, again, just on a church-wide level. Maybe you, as you hear me talk about planning, think, man, I'm in this ditch over here. I didn't even realize it until this morning, or I'm in this other ditch. I want to say the first step for pulling out of that ditch is to go and seek the Lord and say, God, I recognize that you've got dreams and plans for my life, and my planning, I want to be in cooperation with you. That this is a part of the wise planning, that we want to be in cooperation with what God has for us and not just come up with our own desires and our own dreams. I want to read you a few scriptures from the Proverbs that talk about our ability and our desires to plan as human beings, and then God's ability to really make stuff secure and firm and make it go. Proverbs 16, verse 9 says, "In their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps." Anytime you begin to plan, anytime you begin to chart out a course and look out ahead, one of the things to always remember is that we have a tendency to want to plan everything out, but we have to recognize that it's the Lord who establishes steps. There's another verse, it's Proverbs 19, I got the reference wrong on the screens, but it's Proverbs 19:21, and it says this, "Many are the plans in a person's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails." So again, when we want to try and get God's vision for our life, we go to God first. God, what is it? What? Show me your heart. Show me your mind. I want to be in cooperation with what you want for me, what you want for us. There's a couple other verses here, Proverbs 16:3 and Psalm 127:1 that speak to similar kinds of things. This next slide, commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans. And then Psalm 127, unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. So all four of these verses kind of speak in the same kind of truth, aren't they? That when we come to a planning phase, a planning stage, a vision planning stage in our life individually or in the life of a church, that the best thing we can do is take all of these plans and just bring them before the Lord and say, God, you're going to make anything that's important. Not me. Your vision is what's going to matter, not mine. And your will needs to be done, not my own. And so I want to be in cooperation with that. I want to be working for that kind of vision. And that kind of vision is so critical. That kind of vision that comes from God, where God is guiding and directing and giving us a picture and an idea of a hill to kind of climb towards and drive towards. That kind of vision that comes from God is so important, because in another proverb, Proverb 29, one of the verses we find is that, this is the old King James version, without vision, people perish. Without vision, people perish. And this isn't some generic kind of vision that you can just like take this verse out and put it in some business setting and say this, so we've got to have a vision plan or something like that. This very particularly, this kind of vision is that vision from God. Maybe a better even translation other than vision would be without prophetic revelation. Without the people of God going and seeking the Lord and getting a collective sense of this is God's will and God's guidance and God's direction for our people at this time. This is where we are meant to move. Without that kind of word for the Lord from a people, we will die. We'll die. We'll get lost. We'll wander off into the wilderness. We'll fall off into a ditch that leads to nowhere. And there's a paraphrase in the Message version of this verse that I love that goes out the whole verse. It says, if people can't see what God is doing, they stumble all over themselves. But when they attend to what he reveals, they are most blessed. Are you with me this morning? Are we tracking here? This is true, again, in your life or as a church, as we're talking about. When we're going to seek the Lord's vision, without a vision from God for your life, for our church, for your family, for your workplace, like whatever it is, without a vision from God, we tend to just wander around and get lost. And the old King James version just puts a pin on it, that we perish. We get lost in the wilderness without a vision from God. So as a church, we haven't always done this perfectly, but we've tried as a church to be real deliberate to seek that kind of vision, not just to come up with the kind of church that we all just kind of want to be a part of or something like that, or just something that sounds good. We've really tried not to just pay attention to like church trends and, you know, that kind of stuff. But God, what kind of church do you want us to be? Whether or not it looks like any other church, what do you want us to be as a church? I remember about 10 years, well, no, I guess it was about 8 years ago now, or 9 years ago. I've been here for almost 10 years. It all kind of runs together, some of it. So I remember like 9 years ago or so, sitting down and beginning to work on our Vision 2020 plan that we're just coming to the end of. And we were trying to seek that kind of vision. A small group of us would sit in a room on Saturday mornings and just pray and seek God's guidance and direction about where he wanted us to go. And man, I'll tell you, before we begin to look at the next 10, can we just like turn back one more time and just look at the last 10 and celebrate what God has done in our midst? That as a result of that kind of deliberate vision planning and seeking God's will for our church, we've gone through some incredible journeys over this past, it didn't end up being a 10-year plan. We called it a 10-year plan, called it Vision 2020, but God accomplished it even before that. The first parts of the vision plan that we came up were just kind of like basic necessity kind of stuff. We were dying in a high rent, temporary strip mall space at the beginning of this vision plan. And so the beginning of that Vision 2020 plan was real practical stuff. How do we get out from under this suffocating rent that we were paying and was hamstringing us from doing any ministry? So we like did building campaigns, and we talked about finding a place of permanence where we could have a bigger impact in our community that wasn't hidden in a corner of a strip mall behind several other businesses and like that kind of stuff. And man, God brought us this building here. And I know you drive by it and it's not much to look at. It looks like a pole barn and there's probably some cattle in here or something. I don't know. You know, but we do the best we can with it. But man, from my perspective and knowing where we were at that strip mall and what that cost us to even be there, this place is an incredible answer to prayer for us. It's an answer to prayers, God's vision to get us out from that rent and that huge cost to a place that's way more manageable and is ours, right? And also, we talked about visibility and all kinds of stuff. God put us on Main Street in Murfreesboro. I mean, imagine that. I used to have to tell people, oh man, well, if you go here to this business and then you go behind that business and then if you go behind that one and into the corner of this one place and then if you like get past the bouncers or something, then you can worship with us, you know? It was horrible. And so now here we are on Main Street, right across the street from 30,000 students at MTSU. Which when Real Life was planted, we felt like we had a real calling to maybe find a way to reach out to the college community. And here we are right across the street from them. God's done these things in our midst. This is something to celebrate that God has done. I got to look and we could talk about several like statistical things over the past several years, but the most important one to me is that there have been over 60 baptisms in the past 10 years or so, in the past 8 years or so. Like, can we just give God a hand for that? I mean, that means new, God, thank you for that. That means new life has begun through the ministry here. And that was one of the things that we said, we don't care if we ever become a large church, but one of the things that we never want to skimp on is our passion for reaching people who don't know Jesus and inviting them into a relationship with him and just linking up their arms with God's arms and connecting them to God. We never want to skimp on that. So man, that's incredible. One of the other things that we talked about is, again, we never want to necessarily grow into a big mega church, but we want to have people who come into relationship with God, find a place to worship God and connect with God and others and grow in relationship with Christ there and learn to share what God has poured into them with other people. And over the past several years here in this Vision 2020 plan, we started that we were running around 70 people when I got here in our average attendance. And with Real Life and Blackman Community now, we're landing on a given weekend anywhere between 220 and 250 people over this past. So God has like tripled in size in the amount of people that are being reached. That's been an incredible ride. And God has been faithful in so many ways to all these things. And then, of course, I just mentioned Blackman Community. That capstone of that vision plan, that Vision 2020 plan, was planting a church. I remember when we first threw that out there in that vision task force several years ago. And we were like, well, you know, we never probably want to become a big mega church, so maybe we'll plant some churches. And everybody's like, yeah, plant some churches. Right, because none of us had really been a part of much of that. So we were like, let's push that as far down the road as possible. Like if God ever does that, that'll be a major miracle, right? And here God has just surprised us over and over and over again and accomplished it before we even had planned to, like we were just going to be getting started and talking about it in the Vision 2020 plan, and it's already done. Incredible things have happened. Now, one of the challenges, though, when you get to the end of a vision plan or you reach a goal, or you reach a destination in life or in church, that one of the tendencies that we have is to say, okay, I guess that's done now and we've accomplished what we're here for. And to just kind of put our feet up and relax and say, okay, now that vision plan is done, we worked really hard on that. We sacrificed. We're tired now. Let's just ride off into the sunset and drift, or let's just plan and make a church like we want the church to be or whatever. And we could easily fall into one of those ditches. Sometimes the goal that you reach in life or in church actually becomes the obstacle for getting to the place where you're really meant to go. Are you with me there? Does that make sense? Sometimes you can hit one of these intermediate goals, or you can come to the end of one journey and say, okay, I guess we're done now. And man, I remember I was on a plane flying back from Disney World. We took a vacation back in January, and my family did, and we were a couple of months away from actually finishing that Vision 2020 plan with the official launch of Blackman Community Church on the other side of town. And I was thinking about this. I was thinking, what comes next, you know? And what do we do next? And I was thinking about finishing that goal. And, okay, does that mean we're done now? Like, what do we do next? And I think that there's a natural kind of like, it's okay to take a deep breath at the end of one of those goal kind of deals. You know, when you have a baby, you don't turn right around and, like, have another baby the next month, right? And all the ladies were like, amen. So there's a process there where you kind of heal up, you catch your breath or whatever, but that doesn't mean it's over, right? So you have something else. And anyway, I was reading one of the magazines in the back of one of the magazines, you know, of one of the seats on the airplane, and I turned to one article that was written by this NASA scientist. And this NASA scientist, I can't remember his name now, but he talked about how when he was growing up, he saw JFK give the "We're going to the moon" speech. And he remembered thinking, that is the most inspiring thing in the world. I want to be where the action is, where people are like going and stretching and dreaming and doing more. You know, I want to be a NASA scientist. And so he spent his whole life planning to get up to that spot. And as he was growing up, of course, we made it to the moon, right? And NASA kind of changed, he noticed, as a result of reaching that goal. To the point where by the time he became an official NASA scientist, he looked around and noticed that there was a lot of that drive of we're going to become Star Trek, you know, was gone. And they had just kind of been coasting on the tails of the past several decades of that kind of moon trip. And they'd go to the moon again and again and again, but like, what was next? Nobody was talking about that. And he wrote this phrase that really just jumped off the page and grabbed me. He said, "Thus, when we reached our goal, one of the most ambitious endeavors in the history of humankind, we turned back. I've learned that goals can actually act as an impediment to further progress if it represents the height of our ambition. And somewhere along the way, we forgot why we were inspired to reach the moon to begin with." Listen, at every stage of your life, you check off a major thing. That's great. Celebrate that. Like thank God for that. Take a breath if you need to. But then don't let that goal and the completion of it keep you turned backwards. Don't forget to pivot and see what comes next. What's the next big thing? What's the next vision? And so over the past few months, we've been working as a leadership team, really working on the next 10. We've been trying to pick our head up from all the details of church planting and the things we've been working on. Try and pick our head up and stare out and look out into the horizon, beyond the horizon. God, what's the next big thing that you have for us 10 years from now? What do you want this church to look like? What do you want us to be celebrating 10 years from now? We've been trying to do it in that Proverbs wise kind of way where every time we start a planning session, God, this is your plans. We want your heart. We want your mind. We don't want to move without you directing the steps. And so I'm going to roll this out for us this morning. This is like the longest preamble ever to the vision plan, isn't it? But we're going to be spending all month on it. So it's going to be one of those things that trickles out. But today I want to talk just for a few brief moments about our beyond the horizon line vision. So this is like the long way off, 10 years from now, what do we want to be? What do we want to have accomplished? Like way out there that will help us get our bearings and make decisions in the present day. So the next 10, there are two major emphases to this vision plan. Two major emphases that really are going to spur all kinds of activity over the next 10 years in so many different ways that we'll be talking about for the next several weeks. But the first major emphasis that I want to talk about this morning that we want to talk about as a beyond the horizon line vision is gospel saturation for the neighborhood. And here's the phrase here. In the next 10 years, Real Life Community will saturate our neighborhood. And by neighborhood, we mean the 1 mile radius around our building, which includes almost 27,000 people, guys, in 1 mile radius. And we want to saturate our neighborhood with the embodiment of the gospel by becoming a source of kingdom blessing, shelter, and community for it. Now, just about every word in that paragraph is important, and we're going to be talking about this over the next couple weeks, especially next week as we talk about what it means to be a neighborhood church. Let me just riff on this for a minute and talk about this for just a minute. We want to make a commitment at Real Life Community to being a neighborhood church, recognizing that we have been placed in a place and place matters. Our neighbors matter. The people that live in houses and apartment complexes and own businesses and run restaurants and go to school in this 1 mile radius, this is our mission area. And so if you don't live in this mission area, that's fine. I don't live in this mission area. That's okay. But we've been placed here as a church and given this place, and we have a responsibility to being kingdom of God embodiment to the people around us. Now, I want to say this. I believe in neighborhood churches for this day and age in our current culture. We need neighborhood churches. We need churches that aren't into the next like big flashy light, that aren't totally into all of what we can do online or whatever. We need churches that have bodies. We need a place where people can come in a world that is increasingly isolated, that is increasingly kind of cordoned off into silos and doesn't mix with people that aren't like them. We need a church where lots of different people can come together and find their place in community and in a home with an actual group of people, right? And this group of people that is open-armed and extending relationship and is trying to be a conduit for the community of love that exists as the triune God. This, I believe, in our current culture, in our day and age, is really, really necessarily expressed in a local church congregation. A small one, too. I feel like we're positioned really well to just be that kind of kingdom blessing, that embodiment of the gospel. So people can come who maybe don't know anything about God or just have no idea of what it looks like to step into a relationship with God, but can come to a place like this and see what that looks like with flesh and bones and be invited into a family together where they can experience that kind of a deal. And where this body is also going out and providing shade and blessing and saturating our neighborhood with good news of Jesus. Now, if you need a picture for what this looks like, we're going to be talking about this next week especially. If you could think of a tree growing up right here on our property that puts its roots down deep and then that grows up and becomes kind of this tree of shade and community and blessing where all the people can gather and find shelter and fruit from it. And it just becomes a source of blessing and nourishment and good for the community in which it's been planted. That's the kind of thing that I'd like to see happen, that we'd like to see happen. Now, with a tree that grows up, obviously there are seeds that go out from this tree, right? And this leads us to the next part of the vision plan, the next emphasis. We don't want to just be a neighborhood church. For our neighborhood, we do want to saturate this neighborhood with the gospel. But we've also been placed in a city that is kind of like our Judea, you know? That is the next kind of circle for us. And we're passionate about Murfreesboro too. And so what's the plan for that? Well, that's emphasis number two. Emphasis number two is cultural replication for the city. Over this time, we will also give ourselves away to help facilitate 5 new churches in different strategic areas of Murfreesboro. And everybody's like, wait, 5 churches? What? You know, like, what are we signing up for? Now, I want to say just real quick, a caveat here. We're not talking about we're going to plant 5 more Blackman Community churches in Murfreesboro exactly the way that we did. But what we do want to do is we want to help facilitate more neighborhood churches in the city of Murfreesboro that have the same kind of local emphasis, desire to saturate their area with the gospel and be that tree of blessing and shade and shelter that grows up over that neighborhood or that community. And so we want these seeds to go out. 5 different churches in different strategic areas of Murfreesboro that we want to help facilitate in some way. So that might mean Helping Blackman Community launch one later on down the road. They've got their own plans of planting a church. It might mean, it does mean actually, the Hispanic church plant that has just started 3 weeks ago. Just making our space available. That's facilitating, right? We've got another Nazarene church coming to the Barfield area in April of next year. And the lead pastor or the church planner of that work is coming to speak to us at the end of October. And we want to find ways to partner with them and help them to get that work established. Okay, so I'll go on. Our dream then is that God would use us to help establish a vibrant network of local expressions of the body of Christ for communities and neighborhoods in the city, with each local body responsible for saturating their area with the embodiment of the gospel. And in this way, we hope to make an eternal difference in the city of Murfreesboro. Those are our two emphases, guys. Those are the two things right there. And I know that, like, it's fire hose kind of deal. There's so much that comes along with this that we've been working on and planning on and thinking on. We're going to be talking about that for the next several weeks, but this is it. Here at Real Life, we want to just turn our eyes towards our local area and saturate this place, the 1 mile radius, with the gospel, to be the best neighborhood local church that we can, and then to replicate that culture, that DNA, in sending the seed out to different places, like we've just done with Blackman Community, like's going to happen with Barfield, like we hope it will happen there at First Church with that network of churches that gather together and say, we are small local churches, but we're also more than that. We're a part of a network that's seeking to make an eternal difference in the city of Murfreesboro with these partnerships together. A few months ago, Joshua and I, the pastor at Blackman Community, were at a conference, a church planning conference, and at one point they gave us all napkins and pens and said, we want you to just write out a picture of God's dream for your church, you know, like what you hope to see God accomplish in your church. And I pulled out my phone, and because I'd had this map in my mind, this map of Murfreesboro, and I want to switch to the next picture here, Sarah. This is what I ended up drawing. This was back in February that I felt like God was moving on us for. This is a map of Murfreesboro with a bunch of random circles in it, but the circles aren't random. You see that yellow line that runs kind of up this direction is 24 and 840 kind of goes up that way. This is just a screenshot of my phone. That circle right in the middle of that network is First Church of the Nazarene, where we have recently started Sunday night discipleship groups together and started this network, this partnership together. They're still a local church. We're still a local church. Blackman Community is a local church, but we're beginning to work together. The circle on the far left of that center networked area is Blackman Community. That's right where they're at. The circle on the far right of that networked area, that's us. That's our neighborhood right there. The circle down at the bottom, and we didn't even know the bottom of the networked area, that's right exactly where Barfield Community Church is going to be planted in April of next year. And then up north is maybe a future church plant up there in the Las Casas area. And then I just got crazy and I started drawing circles everywhere. So, but that networked area, that's kind of that vision of what would it look like to take all the strengths of a small local church that can really embody the gospel and give people a handle for how to belong to the family of God, and be attentive to the needs and the issues in the local neighborhood, but then also have maybe some of the benefits of having several churches banded together so you could have like a youth ministry for the city and a children's ministry that's maybe bigger than your own and small groups that you can attend in your neighborhood or on the night that it works for you, because we're all working together. We're all part of the same team, even though we're autonomous kind of churches. So much to unpack over these next couple weeks. The heart of it is that we want to be a church that continues to try and seek the heart of God, that tries to be in step with the spirit of who Jesus is, who came and gave himself away in love for the people that he was seeking to find and to redeem. We want to be that kind of church. How do we give ourselves away? How do we give ourselves away to the neighborhood? How do we give ourselves away beyond the neighborhood to help other neighborhoods get churches that will give themselves away to their neighborhoods? And how do we just continue this process of allowing the kingdom to grow up and thrive and be a blessing to the city in which we've been placed? And how do we step close with Jesus? I want to invite the band to come up. They're going to sing for us this new song that's been gripping a lot of our hearts, and it's called Shadow Step. And as we think about our church's mission and vision, and maybe for you, as you think about your own life, what is the next thing for me? What is the beyond the horizon line vision for my life? Where do I want to be in 5 or 10 years? I've never thought about that. Or maybe I've never thought about it in conjunction and in cooperation with what God's dreams are for me. Today is the day. It starts real simply with just going and bringing all those plans before God and committing to them to the Lord and saying, God, where do you want me to go? I want to be so close to you that I'm following in the shadow of your walk. And so as the band sings, if you know it, feel free to sing along. If not, just take this time to prayerfully reflect. Pray for your church. Pray for the neighborhood that we're in. Pray for the network. Pray for the embodiment of the gospel. Pray for your own life and the dreams and vision that God has for you. And just bring this all before the Lord and let his Spirit just settle in over you this morning. All right, let's sing.